Hello, and welcome back to the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
It is good to be back, boys. And ironically enough, tonight is going to be the final... the premiere of the final season of Supernatural, so kind of ironic as well.
Will, I don't understand why you play that song. I don't get that reference.
Ah, jeez Louise. It's been 15 years, come on! People already got the reference.
I don't get that reference, Dean. Is it a song that is special to you, or Sam, or me? But if it was special to me, then I would probably know that, but I don't know. Don't knock the cast impersonation. My cast impersonation is legendary, and you know it. Anyway, don't ask me. Ask any person that's heard my cast impersonation. They go, "Oh my gosh, you sound like Cass." Thank you very much.
All
Collins.
I know is that you were too cowardly to do whatever impersonation I was asking you to do the other week.
It wasn't impersonation. So... you wanted me to do the Donald Duck scream.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And if I shook my head too fast, like I told you I would do, it would knock my headphones off, and I don't want to do that.
Well. Listen.
Anyway, criticizing me across the way is Talia's Tyler.
That's what I do. I have to loosen Todd up before the show. But I also agree with Todd. I too did not get Will's reference there.
Okay,
so
carry
I
on.
Assume it had to do with Supernatural.
Yes, "Carry On, My Wayward Son" is the song that is tied the most to Supernatural, mainly because at the end of every season they do a "The Road So Far" and they play "Carry On, My Wayward Son" as they do like the visual recap of the season.
Gotcha. Now I know. How about that?
And then, technically speaking, both Sam and Dean Winchester are wayward sons. So, yeah.
I mean, the reason I also played it is because, again, we just came back from like a 2-week vacation. But, yeah, we came out from a week break. And, yeah, it just kind of felt like it was kind of meant for it. I'm guessing. We just forgot right.
And of course, we thank all of you who listened to our hilarious yet somewhat technically difficult 150th episode. We had multiple guest hosts, basically bringing back almost all the guest hosts we've had in over our history. And it was a really fun show. It had a lot of fun. We went like 2 hours, and it was so worth it. So thank you all of you who got to be on the show, no matter what time you had on it. And we'll definitely try and do this again. And then last week was just this perfect cacophony. What a word, by the way.
Good word.
Thank you. That's why I'm the host. Of things that were going on. Tyler had a family thing. Will was at New York Comic Con. I had a personal thing. And so it was just like Thursday was completely undoable. Wednesday would have been just as hard. And then Friday was – I couldn't have done it then either. So – we took the week off, and so now we're back, and so we're going to be playing a little bit of catch-up, having a little bit of fun, and looking towards the future of the console wars. So let's get it all started off with, what have you been playing? I'll get it started, because, gentlemen,
what?
It's been 84 years. No, I'm kidding, it hasn't been 84. It's actually been 26. It's been 26 years, but I have finally beaten The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. It's finally happened.
I heard you cheated though.
Okay, I didn't cheat.
I read in your review actually that
there
you cheated.
Go. I did not cheat.
Plugged the review though. So
thank you. No, I used a guide that is not cheating. There is a difference.
You decide for yourself, dear audience member.
It's called a guide for a reason. Okay?
Will, what are your thoughts? Did Todd cheat?
Oh yeah, like I need judgment from Will. I've seen his Twitter. All right.
I'm curious. I want to hear what Will has to say on it.
All right, fine.
Well, forgive me for I have not read the review, but if you're stuck on a point, I mean, again, I'm even aware that Link's Awakening there are points you can get stuck at. So I still get stuck in Zelda or in Ocarina of Time back in Wii days when I was on the Wii.
There you go.
So. I mean, if you get stuck, I think it's legit you can use a guide.
Yeah. Aha!
You guys are so soft. You guys, if I didn't know better, I would say you were millennials.
Well, I mean, technically we are, because... Okay, can we just talk about the fact that millennials are anything after 1985? I don't get that. That doesn't make any sense. That's literally 15 years before the millennium point. I was born in the 80s, dang it. What do you want from me? Anyway, but no, I did use a guide because this is old school Zelda, which means it's very, very hard dungeon-wise. And even the parts I didn't need the guide for, I would have recognized that, man, if I was going to get stuck, it'd be about a point like this. So, and some of the, there are certain side quests in the game where you absolutely need a guide unless you wanted to spend the time wandering around the world. Then again, I guess that's what you and Will do, Tyler,
that's right.
Because that's why it took you how many years to beat Breath of the Wild, exactly?
God, we figured out the old-fashioned way. And I would just like to point out that I 100%ed Breath of the Wild, and you probably, like, 20%ed it.
67, and...
Yep, that's not...
But
well, okay,
I was actually,
so I didn't get
I had
all
a thing
the
called a review
Kokora
to do.
Seeds or, but...
So who's judging who here? I mean, where's your Celeste review, by the way?
It's on the podcast. You can listen to it.
Oh,
I gave it a 10 out of 10.
What episode was that, Tyler? So that
it, listen, you can scroll through. If you haven't listened to the whole catalog, you are missing out.
That's
so,
true.
So
that
go ahead
I'll
and find it and tell me which episode it was. So right,
anyway, getting back to Link's Awakening, I did finally beat the game. Now, ironically enough, when I was a child and I didn't have a guide, I did make it to level 7, and I did get all 7 instruments, though I think pretty sure it took me a long time. I couldn't figure out number 8, though, and I remember why now, but I did finally beat the game. I got to awaken the wooden fish and kill Marin and all of that, so... It's just as heartbreaking as I thought it would be, and dang you, Nintendo, for making it feel real. So, but still, amazing game. I have my review up on the website. I would have had it up last week, but personal life and work just wouldn't allow me to do it. And I get a 4.5 out of 5, which seems to be my thing nowadays.
You give every game 4.0. You have to just give a game like a 4 or a 5 one time just
well,
to
I mean, I have.
Keep the world
I
on
gave,
its toes.
I gave Splatoon 2 a 4 out of 5. I gave Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle a 4 out of 5.
Those were 2017 games.
Oh, gosh. I can't... Oh, so, okay, so you're criticizing me for Nintendo making great games this year.
No, I'm not criticizing you. I just think the 4.5 out of 5 loses its power.
I believe we talked about this in another episode. I believe that if a game is truly perfect, that it'll speak for itself. And yet, if I have, like Breath of the Wild. I remember now. We were talking about Breath of the Wild. Everyone was giving it a perfect score. And everyone was saying, oh my gosh, this is such a magical game. It can't be beat. And I'm like, yes, it's a magical game. Yes, it's one of the best Zelda games ever made. No, it ain't perfect. Lightning! That sucks! And the weapons breaking. Did not like that. And I understood why some people didn't like the shrines versus the temples and everything like that. And so for me, that knocked points off, which at the time was a 4.75 before they changed the system. But I couldn't justify myself giving it a perfect score. And it's the same thing with Link's Awakening. Is it a great game? Yes. Is it old school Zelda at its finest? Yes. Is it perfect? Not so much. I mean, part of it is because of time period. This is an older Zelda game. And so a lot of the content is very... focused. There's like 2 or 3 major side quests and that's it, and you only really have to do one of them to complete the game. So it's not like, you know, an Ocarina of Time or even Majora's Mask or, you know, something like that. But again, that's just because of the time period. There's also this weird area of effect on the screen. I don't know why they did that, but it makes it look blurry on the corners and like why does it do that? It totally threw me off. I'm like, is this my screen doing this? I'm like, oh no, it's the game. So there are points, and then like a lot of reviews, I saw no need to do the dungeon creator thing, and everyone who I read did do it. They're like, it's okay, but it's not even close to like Mario Maker, and so it felt like something that was just tacked on, which ironically we found out was exactly the case via Aonuma. So I don't feel it was a perfect game, but I don't think it was a 4 because it's definitely better than that. So I stand by my 4.5 at the 5 judgment. So, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it's still a fun game. I can't believe how much I remembered from this game. Like, I remember the exact name of the first couple dungeons with the tail key and the tail dungeon and all that. I remembered certain characters and what they were like. I remember all the Nintendo references and beyond. And there's so many Nintendo references in this game. I seriously want to know what they were thinking about in 1994 and 5 when they were making this game. Like, what Nintendo characters can we throw in Legend of Zelda that you think would work? How about Chain Chomp? Yeah, we can make that work. Or we can turn into a pet. How about Kirby? Can we throw him in there? Wouldn't he be a monster? Yeah! It's like, it just goes, and there's Shy Guys, there's Goombas. They don't even hide the Goombas. I mean, they change at least Kirby a little bit to make him look less like Kirby, but the Goombas are just freaking Goombas.
Right.
It's just hilarious. But no, the game is great. Love it. Absolutely should get it. It's apparently doing amazing on the sales charts. We'll be talking about that a little bit later. So, but yeah, if you haven't gotten the game yet, if you've been waiting for the go-ahead, this is my... You get the Black Magic Wolf Triforce Todd Guarantee. I combined both of my nicknames because I'm awesome like that. But yes, it is NEP approved. It is Outer Haven approved. Another hit on the Nintendo Switch. Go get it.
I actually did get it. I haven't played it yet because busy and Fire Emblem.
And I think you also bought another game as well, Tyler.
I did. I haven't started that one yet either. Actually, I bought a bunch of games. So I have Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair. I bought that. I bought a Cadence of Hyrule. I bought Crypt of the Necrodancer. I bought Link's Awakening, and I bought Dragon Quest 11S. Which,
wow, I wouldn't have taken you as a Dragon Quest guy.
I love RPGs. I've never played a Dragon Quest game, and I just, something about the art style on this one, I really like how it looks.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody could use a little optimism in their life every now and again. So I've read that this game is very positive, and you know, after a dark and grueling game like Fire Emblem, I think that's probably what I need. But first, I have to finish my Blue Lions run, and then I will probably start Dragon Quest alongside a Black Eagles run. But we'll have to see. Maybe I'll play Link's Awakening. I have been playing Fire Emblem Three Houses, of course. I am doing my maddening Blue Lions run still. Things were going great for the Blue Lion House. We were, my units got super strong. We were just steamrolling the first half of the game in the final chapters. I was like, I did it. Difficulty curve overcome. And then the time skip happened. And you might recall when we first talked about this game, I said that the first chapter after the time skip was like way harder, and I thought maybe the game was going to get difficult, and then it kind of went back to not being that difficult. I kind of hope that's the case this time, because this chapter where you have to fight these thieves is so hard. One, they don't let you organize your units, so I had Dimitri build out to be a swordsman when the map was filled with sword users. So
okay.
Ideally, I would have been able to switch him over to being a lance user using a Swordbreaker to knock the enemy's hit down to like 30%. But as it stood, these guys were coming up to him with like a 60% chance to hit, and he had 28 speed. 28 speed is a lot for those who haven't played the game. He was being doubled by everybody. They have 32 base speed. You have to have 4 or more to double attack. So I literally couldn't move, and I thought the game was going to be impossible. But then I came up with a plan. I gave Dimitri a speed wing on the first turn. I equipped him with an iron sword so he could just kind of take one hit and one blow at a time and try to claw things up. Unfortunately, the enemies have passed, so they could come in and surround. Like in this first little area, I could have been surrounded and killed. My Byleth couldn't survive one round against these guys. It was brutal. When the reinforcements came, that didn't make it any easier, because literally all of them, except for Mercedes, who could heal from long range, but she couldn't move because there was a brawler that would have one-shotted her and Annette right at the bottom of the screen, so they couldn't move. All they could do was heal. It was so challenging. And just a fair warning, if you're trying a maddening Blue Lions run, you have to be ready for this chapter. In the chapter beforehand, when your Edelgard is charging the monastery, make sure you equip Dimitri with Swordbreaker and a lance user build, because otherwise it's going to be tough. I finally broke through and was able to get it done. After you get through the first like 4 turns, it's kind of easy because the crowd thins out, but it was so tough. It took me like an hour and a half, and it was great fun, and yet also definitely the most frustrating experience with Three Houses of Edea, because it did feel unfair until I figured it out, and I was like, okay, got it.
I'll be diving back into my Golden Deer run, which has been, of course, been on hold ever since Link's Awakening came out, but I'm looking forward to that, so yeah. Fire Emblem!
Ayo. I guess I'll go next, and for me, like, just what I've been recently playing is, one, of course, I've been playing at New York Comic Con, and I must say, like, I didn't meet Veronica Taylor not once, not twice, but thrice.
Dang,
and,
dude.
Yeah, you pretty much, described it as best, like, Veronica Taylor is just, she is so positive. She's just so bubbly. Like, when
she's
I just
amazing.
Listened to her and we talked about, like, of course, with her 8 years of being Ash, as well as we talked about being Anwella in Fire Emblem Three Houses, is like, wow,
I'm still shocked by that. I'm pretty sure half the reason I like her is Manuela is because of Veronica Taylor. Like, I can't hate Veronica Taylor. Come on.
Yeah, and like, yeah, just listening to her in the panels, talking about these roles that she has, and of course, I'm like just basically talking about Manuela a bit. Like, she also has some pretty funny quirks. I like talked about her when she was voicing the C rank conversation when she woke up from a hangover, which is like a pretty funny deal. And especially like she didn't know that you actually can get together with Manuela, so like she said, "Oh," and like funny joke that one person said, like, "Which kind of Pokemon would you want to be?" "Ditto, because I can be anything you want to be," and that is straight from her. I am not kidding.
I love it. And
so yeah, that was pretty amazing. But yeah, Veronica Taylor is just amazing. So yeah, definitely bet game four just because of her, honestly. And what is a great character.
Yes, she is.
So yeah, on that, and yeah, on the gaming side of things, yeah, just as a recent note, I've been actually playing Fire Emblem Heroes, which is the new mode with the I know there's like they have a like the a little farming thing for provisions as well as a new mode. I forgot his
Hall
name.
Hall of Forms.
Thank you, Hall of Forms, which preset teams and choose to level them up, go up to this basically like a dungeon gauntlet, which, okay, nothing, but basically it's something, just to buy your time with, and okay, and then with the new heroes of the dual heroes of Hector and Child Liana, which like, is like, okay. A dual hero, great. Even more to break of the power creep. So yeah, just hopefully try to play the RNG for that. And the game that I've actually been more or less focused on is I've been playing Code Vein for the PS4. And if you love your Souls-like games like with an anime twist, I say this one is definitely the more accessible one of them all. Like, sure, you can hear Sekiro, Dark Souls, and all that. I mean, those things are pretty much like they're from software. They're a difficulty on their own. But if you want to like give something a bit more accessible, a bit more easy on the side, and I highly suggest playing Code Vein, because like one, it isn't really that tough. Like there are some monsters that are like a little bit have to recognize the battle patterns, but overall it's not as like it's like Neo or Dark Souls levels of like brutal difficulty. So if you want something accessible, I highly suggest getting a Code Vein for the PS4. And lastly, like this is also coming for the Switch later on, but I'm also trying out a little bit of Indivisible from 555 Games, who also did Skullgirls, and I gotta say it is just beautiful. It's just simply beautiful. And if you love like games like Valkyrie Profile, which is like the 2D RPG playing battle system, then this is definitely will scratch that niche of a taste for you. So if you love Valkyrie Profile, I definitely suggest getting Indivisible, a great 2D plane platformer slash 2D plane role platformer and RPG. So yeah, I definitely suggest getting Indivisible if you get a chance, and it is coming for the Switch later on down the line, so definitely look forward to it if you plan to get the Switch version.
Yeah, I found it interesting on the on Heroes that we got Liana, and this is her first appearance in the game, so usually I would be mad about this because I'm like, why can't we just get basic Liana, and then you listen to her in the story mode, and then like, yeah, this is actually the perfect time, because her and that dang stomach of hers with, you know, eating everything, and she apparently ate a giant pumpkin in the time it took for one of the characters to turn around. I'm like, yep. That's Liana. It's like, so hungry. One of my favorite interactions with her is actually in Radiant Dawn. It's Liana and Heather, who is one of the newer characters. She's the thief who manipulates men, but has a thing for Nefany. And so she sees Liana is hungry, and so she runs off to go trick a guy to get her some food, and Liana goes, "Her name is Heather. She gets me food. I'll remember that." Oh, good stuff. Oh, and shout out to our dear friend Kromcho, who, I kid you not, guys, if you remember the Thrasir banner, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, she wanted to get Thrasir more than life itself, right? But she also wanted Bunny Veronica. She got six Bunny Veronicas in that banner. Not one Thrasir.
For real?
So yeah, so needless to say, her now super formed Bunny Veronica is like legit OP. But she was like, you know, cranking and cranking and cranking, and then she didn't get it. And yet when the new banner, the Halloween banner, came around, she got the duo of Hector and Lelina like first try. And then she was trying to get someone else, and then she unintentionally got Nagi. And it's just like, okay. I think the gods were like, we're sorry we gave you so many Bunny Veronicas, Kramcho. Here's your other 5-star units. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And
I got nothing. I'm just saying.
Funny enough for me, I actually got 3 units. So, like, yeah, I was trying to vote for Thrasir. So, yeah. RNG.
Yeah. I got nothing during that banner. The Thrasir banner, I don't even remember who I got. It was someone pointless. It was just terrible. So, but yeah. So that's all what we've been playing, and we're going to be doing a little bit of catch up in the news today because we've basically got 3 weeks worth of news to talk about. We didn't take everything, obviously, but we took some of the best parts, and then we're gonna break it down in that way. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. So first up, a story that definitely caught my eye a week or two ago, it was Blizzard, the heads of Blizzard, including Jeff Kaplan, who is the head of the Overwatch, talking about potentially having Overwatch in Switch, which obviously means right now it's not confirmed. So the fifth character, whoever it is, we're going to be talking about rumors later, but it's not an Overwatch character as of yet. That being said, both Jeff Kaplan and some of the other directors and programmers of Overwatch have said to Nintendo officially, take whatever character you want. Okay? And I want you to acknowledge the importance of this statement, because usually a company would go, you can have this character. Or if you're Konami, or if you're Square Enix, you can say, you can have this character, but you only have 2 songs. Zing. But Blizzard is so open to the idea of Overwatch and Smash Brothers, they're like, here's the roster. Pick who you want. I love that.
Which character would you guys want?
Oh. Go first. You've played it, not me.
I mean, the logical choice would be Tracer, granted, because, again, she is the poster girl of Overwatch.
Like, literally.
I can definitely see an easy playset for her. I mean, again, she's very quick style, so a la, like, Little Mac, but with her dual pistol, so... She is definitely the logical choice, but if I want to have a unique character to put in this game, I don't know. Like, I could definitely see, like, we don't really have that many artists besides like from Link and all that, and I mean some distant zone players. So I wouldn't mind having a Hanzo, or heck, even like, I mean, I'm gonna try to avoid any more anime swordsmen like Genji.
Yeah, I was thinking Genji too, but I'm like, that's another swordsman. I mean, how many do we need? Nintendo, yeah, 10 more.
I'd be pretty happy if they have Reinhardt with Darren DePaul. Another bulk tanker. I wouldn't mind. No. Or even D.Va would be awesome.
I don't know. I think you'd have to nerf that. That's right. I know the lore, even though I don't play. I met D.Va once. Aha. But as for me, based on what I know of Overwatch, which is actually surprisingly a lot for having not played it, there are a lot of ways you could go with this. Even the team acknowledges that Tracer is the poster girl. But if you want to go offbeat, which Nintendo sometimes does, there are, again, a lot of options. There are 31 characters. So I know one of the Overwatch team wanted Winston, the super intelligent gorilla. Ah. And I think you could play with that. And his final smash could be his rage form.
Okay.
Yeah, just you could say that Winston will go ape.
That would be great.
Anyway, but like Winston, I think could work. Doomfist. Get another villain in there. I mean, it would be different from Little Mac, because he's not just a puncher, but and his punches are a lot more powerful, obviously. But he'd also be different from Donkey Kong, who's also a, you know, hands-on kind of guy. And the puns today. The puns are sharp. Speaking of shark. Oh, sharp. Also shark. There should be a shark Overwatch character. Why hasn't that been happening? They have a freaking gerbil in Wrecking Ball. I mean, come on. Get on it, Blizzard. But Sharp, Genji is another one. I think they could make him different enough, especially with his dragon techniques. Of course, there's McCree.
McCree.
And they could do a modified, if you remember Snake's original Final Smash with the rocket launcher or the grenade launcher, they could do a modified version of High Noon, and I think that would be a lot of fun. Deadeye. And so there's ways you could do with that. D.Va, obviously, she could play kind of like Samus, where you have her in the android or in the robot and then out of the robot. So there's ways you could go with that. Again, it's Overwatch. There's 31 characters. There's obviously characters you're not going to have. You're not going to put Roadhog in the game. You're not going to put who's his partner? Muskrat?
Junkrat.
Sorry, again, I don't play Overwatch. Junkrat. That's too niche. Trojaborn. You wouldn't put him in there.
Torbjorn.
Whatever.
Swedish.
This is my caring face.
I would like May to be in. I think May is a good choice.
May.
One with the female.
Ice powers
are sweet. And three. Now, I don't know the lore here. May seems like she's kind of, you know, she's a little rotund. She's looking good, but she's a little rotund.
She is.
And we could use a heavyweight. So a heavyweight female would be cool as well.
Not that heavyweight, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, like a Rosalina and Mario Kart. Heavyweight, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Like, I mean, we're not talking like a super heavyweight, but like, you know, we're not talking Donkey Kong heavyweight.
Yeah.
Right.
Like a Ridley level.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, no. There are so many ways. And Reinhardt with his massive hammer and his shield, I almost think that he kind of falls into the Ridley argument of being too big for the screen. But then again, you also have Bowser and DDD who kind of are basically Reinhardt incarnate, just in different
pretty
forms.
Pretty much, yeah.
There are so many ways they can play it. So if I'm Nintendo, I'm like, here's the board, here's the obvious choices we're not picking, and like you said, Will Hanzo as a dedicated archer character, that'd be very unique. So there is a lot of ways you can play, and then Tracer, like we said, you know, with her warping powers and everything, there's a lot of ways that she would be the obvious choice. But if they wanted to go offbeat, there's so many ways you could do it. It's honestly really exciting. So I think that we can basically confirm that in the next wave of Smash Brothers DLC characters, there will be Overwatch, because Blizzard wants it. And so give them what they want. I mean, how many times did we get to say this? I mean, how many times did we get to say that the company wants a character in Smash Brothers and not the fans? I mean, we saw Microsoft teasing that, hey, we'd be fine with Banjo-Kazooie and Smash. That came to pass. So there's Blizzard. They're happy. They're happy that Overwatch is on Switch. I almost said Switch is on Overwatch, which is technically true.
It's coming.
Yeah. So why not? Let's do it.
I mean, not to be all on the tangent, but with the recent events that are happening, let's just gotta wait until the heat dies on so we can talk about that. Just saying.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm not sure you heard about the recent thing about Blizzard, so yeah.
Oh, that one. Okay, I thought you were talking about Overwatch specifically. I'm like, what happened with Overwatch? No, okay. Yeah. Now, actually, Will, you're the expert basically here on Overwatch. What would be the level that they would use?
Specify, please.
If they had an Overwatch-themed level...
You mean that kind of level. I thought you mean like playstyle level. I'm sorry.
No, if they had an Overwatch-themed level, which one do you think would be the one that they would use?
I mean, the very go-to one, I'd probably say, is Overwatch home base's Gibraltar. I guess it could be very similar in terms of like New Donk City, just like revolving like a hover stage to see all the different locales. Gibraltar's Overwatch home base would be the go-to stage, I feel like. But if it's like another variant stage that probably would work well, probably one of the beginning stages. I don't know, that's like the good old UA. Heck, even Hollywood probably would do better.
Yeah.
It's really hard to say. I mean, like, there's a lot of different stages. I mean, but yeah, probably just go with the good old standard home base of Overwatch of Gibraltar.
Fair enough. Also, I just remembered that even if we, let's just say, have Tracer as the main character, we could have a bunch of Overwatch characters be assist trophies.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I sensed hesitation, Will. Why?
No. I mean, again, I'm very open. Like, I'm open to the idea of, like, if they bring anything, again, any character representation in from any series, like Overwatch, heck, even as serving as background characters, like in the Persona 5 stage of Mementos, like, if they have anything of that sort, hell, I mean, I'll be very happy if they do something like that. So, any representation, like Sombra, or heck, you know, the new characters, like Sigma, or even Orisa, I mean, heck, I wouldn't mind. I'd like to be surprised.
Yeah. All right, so let us know who you would like to see from Overwatch in Smash Brothers, and why. And if you say Junkrat, just get out.
We do have a dedicated. We never had a dedicated bomber in, aside from Bomberman, as an assist trophy. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's an assist trophy, then I'd be fine with it because they could put him and Roadhog together and just go crazy on the map. So what do I care? But I'm talking as like an actual character that we have to play. So, moving on to something that is near and dear to our hearts: Fire Emblem Three Houses. So apparently, a poll was taken of the most popular Fire Emblem character, and not surprisingly, it's Dorothea!
Not surprising.
Not surprising. I mean, like, apparently this actually changes on a regular basis, but if we're being honest, it's distinctively stated that she is one of the most beloved characters in the game. She's consistently at the top of all the charts, or on the charts, period. Everybody likes her. Everybody likes her personality. Everyone thinks she's pretty.
Most importantly, she's
a boss unit.
Because everybody thinks that, she's not. She's probably a bottom half unit, but.
No, she's top tier.
That's just not true. But she is easy to recruit. I think she likes authority and charm, which you should just get by playing the game.
Yeah.
So you can pretty much recruit her every single time, as long as you get to like a C in authority, and then you can get her C support just from giving her stuff back. So she's the easiest character in the game to recruit to the other houses. Otherwise, Edelgard would probably still be number one. But now we're seeing a lot of those characters who are easy to recruit being ranked higher. Plus, Edelgard is only playable in one of the four paths for the whole time. So
yeah, I mean, I remember trying to get her in my Blue Lion zone, which was my very first run, and I thought, oh, I'm never going to get to recruit her. And then I did, like, I don't know, five levels in. And I kept using her as, like, the unit you can use for the month. And so by doing that, I got her. And then I didn't even do that for the second round, and I still got her. So, yeah, not surprising.
I mean, I think also, like, aside from the character backstory, it's because, like, Dorothea is the commoner turned noble, so something of that sort. But yeah, I think it's also one important element why she's so popular. It's the hat. I'm sorry. That hat she has is pretty much where her power is in before pre-time skip. I'm sorry. It's the JoJo hat, basically.
I do like the hat. I know a lot of people don't like the hat, though. Her post-time skip look is awesome, too. She has a really good... I like both of her designs.
Very elegant in the post-time skip, but, you know. I liked her hat. I mean, she felt actually very unique compared to certain other characters in terms of the uniform, which of course helped her stand out even more. So, but as with most women in my life, I prefer her story over everything else. Yes, I hear the booze. Shut up. I liked Dorothea's story of how she's a commoner. She's the only commoner, really, in the... she is the only commoner
in
the game.
She is the only commoner in Black Eagles.
Yeah, in the Black Eagles. I'm thinking about it in the wrong context. Right, she's the only commoner in the Black Eagles. She's one of the few commoners to ever make it into the academy like she did. And, you know, she uses her charms to try to find her perfect man. That's just one half of the story. The other reason is because she literally grew up poor, on the streets, had a lucky break, became the songstress diva that we all know and love, but she's not going back to that. She wants to find her perfect man, not just because she wants to fall in love, which is important to her, but she wants to be taken care of, and she wants to know that she's never going to go back to the streets, which is a motivation all of us can recognize. You know, none of us want to be poor. None of us want to be homeless. None of us want to be looked down upon in society. And I was going to make a joke here, but we're having a tender moment, so whatever. but, you know, and we all sympathize with that. And that's why I loved going, having Dorothea in all my different houses so that I could see and hear all her storylines via these characters and see how she connects with everybody. And, like, I love her thing with Ferdinand. I love her thing.
Yeah,
with...
that's where she belongs with Ferdinand.
I don't know about that. I thought she was great with Sylvain, too, but
yep, that's
just me. But, you know, and of course, the her conversation with Manuela in her ace support was also very touching. So, there's a lot of depth, and of course, there's a lot of depth to all of the characters, basically. But with Dorothea, it just really stands out on how much story and personality she really has.
Yep.
Apparently, we all agree on that.
I was waiting for Will to jump in, and then...
Yeah. Awkward silence.
That's all right. We can edit that out.
So... But the, congrats to Dorothea, who is the most popular character. I don't expect that to change anytime soon. All right, so to a game that most definitely needs a more positive turn in terms of player appreciation or lack thereof, Mario Kart Tour. There it is. Okay, so this is literally a tale of two games because, all right, this game has been touted since... Wasn't it like late 2017?
Yeah, we've known about it for a while.
Yeah, we've known about it for a while, and it finally came out. And gameplay wise, I'm just gonna say it's good enough. I honestly haven't played it, so I can't judge it too much.
I've played it. It is extremely boring compared to a normal Mario Kart game.
Wow.
Yes, it is extremely boring. The controls are super wonky. You can pick between like two options. And it's like one you can't drift and one you only drift. It's not a well-made game.
Yeah, and
it's really bad. honestly, like I tried the basic tutorial levels and also did one tour cup. And yeah, it's just the fact that maybe it's again depending on the canvas of your phone, how much screen you have. But for me, it's like okay, it's doable, but at the same, it's not. It doesn't feel as intuitive like with original Mario Kart.
Okay, so this is really a tale of two games, as I was alluding to earlier. In that, okay, downloads wise, it's the best of the releases so far. And think about that between Mario, Fire Emblem, Dr. Mario, and everything else. You know, this was the one that had the most downloads. It had 10 million downloads in a day. Okay, that's very important. That's very impressive. And yet, if we're talking about feedback-wise, it's one of the worst games. It actually ranks right up there with Super Mario Run, which is easily the most reviled of the games. But Mario Kart's giving it a run for its money. Okay? So... It's almost curious because you'd think that they would put the most effort into making Mario Kart Tour the best, and yet apparently they've unintentionally made it one of the worst. So
it's two things. One, it's the extremely aggressive microtransactions. I don't know what it's running in North America, but they released a Diddy Kong pack, which I would be interested in, for 38 euros. Which is as much money as Mario Kart 8 Deluxe costs for Switch. So that's crazy, one. And secondly, what the real issue with this game, I think, is that it's not really an issue. It highlights the divide between the casual player and the hardcore player. Because at least as of 3 days ago when I checked out this game's reviews, it actually had a lot of 5-star reviews in the App Store. And that was... clearly from casual players who were just like, oh, Mario Kart, oh, that's cool, who haven't played Mario Kart in a long time, who didn't know, who haven't been up on what the series is capable of these days. And I think maybe that's just Nintendo's goal here, is to, they're not trying to get people like us who do Nintendo podcasts to really love this game. They'd rather us, you know, buy their console products, but they could be just going for a totally different group who is... not really interested in whether or not they can drift, who doesn't really care whether they have 30 characters at their disposal. They just want a quick Mario Kart experience. And for them, this is clearly working. It's just, as fans of Nintendo and as people who have probably all at one point or another said, hey, Nintendo doesn't, you know, slip into these grimy tactics that Sony and Microsoft do with DLC and microtransactions and all that. Seeing this, it's just like, oh, well, turns out they're just like everybody else. Now, the casual person doesn't follow, doesn't even realize that, and they're just enjoying the game for what it is, so.
Yeah, that's also, like, I think, yeah, I think I understand that point of view. It's, like, for me, when I just see, like, even with, like, grinding, like, the rupees when you want to go for pulling, and especially, like, the gacha rates for these characters, like, less than 5%, like, 3%, I mean, come on, even, like, Fire Emblem Heroes is actually pretty decent nowadays, but it's, yeah, just the fact that how, you can, it's $40, like, and there's, like, the season pass, which you unlock at 200 CCs, and, like, really, Nintendo? Come on, I expected better from you. And, like, there's so much more better things to buy than buy a season pass for Mario Kart Tour. I mean, heck, you can buy Undertale, you can buy Celeste, all these other games that's in the Nintendo eShop, much better value. And you want us to drop this amount on a season pass on a mobile game? It's like, ugh. Like, Nintendo, you were supposed to be the chosen one, and you had to go do this? I mean, probably, again, like the casual players, they probably wouldn't know better, but we're going to people like us, Nintendo fans, that have been observing Nintendo for so long, it's just, and especially with the recent industry of late, it kind of like, you know, Nintendo, what are you doing?
Hello there, Obi-Wan.
Well, that's a great point, though, Will. I mean, the season pass, I would assume that brings characters with him, right? Because that could be why their price is so high for this Diddy Kong pack, just because they need to validate the already high price tag for the season pass.
And just also a clarifying as well, like, because actually down the line in the tour, you actually can unlock characters. It's just a whole lot of grinding for those stars to unlock them. So you can actually do unlock drivers, but it takes a while. It takes a grind.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see how Nintendo reacts to the backlash. And they are going to react to it. They've already stated they will. But yeah, this was the game that should have been one of their highlights alongside, you know, Fire Emblem Heroes. I would even say Dr. Mario. I still enjoy that game, though I haven't played it in a while. They should have done better with this. So
they should have.
They should have.
Yeah. The four Nintendo apps that I have installed, Pokemon Masters, Mario Kart Tour, Fire Emblem Heroes, and Dr. Mario World, Pokemon Masters is by far the least popular, and I have seen a lot of people criticizing that game, which I agree. I think that game's a disaster. And it has a 3.5 star rating. That's by far the lowest. Dr. Mario World is the second lowest with 4.1. So yeah, Nintendo's mobile offerings. Fire Emblem Heroes is number one, of course, with 4.5. Mario Kart Tour is 4.4 stars. But yeah, so there you go. Nintendo's mobile strategy, we'll have to talk about that some other day.
Yeah, that's another topic entirely.
It is all over the place right now.
So, all right, moving on to a topic I'm very interested in hearing Tyler's opinion about, Pokemon! So, Nintendo recently did a 24-hour live stream, specifically of a specific region in the Galar area of the world. What was it called? Like the Glimwood Forest or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, and obviously the intent of this was to not just show the 3D Pokemon world that Game Freak and such were creating, but also to show off and tease a lot of the new Pokemon, of which there were several that were teased. But the one that everyone is talking about and was recently confirmed via trailer was none other than Galarian Ponyta, who literally looks like My Little Pony. Yeah, or as Will rightfully pointed out, a cotton candy Ponyta. So,
sorry, it really does remind me of cotton candy.
It does. I was looking at it. I was looking at the mane, and I'm like, what does that remind me of? And I thought of My Little Pony for obvious reasons, but I look at it, and now I see the cotton candy. So don't apologize, Will. You did nothing wrong this time. But no, the new Ponyta is out. It's a psychic type Pokemon now instead of a fire type. So that's going to be interesting. And then it has a new special ability that both prevents poisoning of you and your allies. And if a poisoned ally comes out into battle, they will be instantly healed.
Oh.
The reason for this is that there is apparently, I kid you not, magic of a sort in the forest, and because the Ponyta stayed in there for so long, they actually absorbed the magic into their bodies, yada yada yada, Pokemon stuff. And that's why they are now psychic type Pokemon, which makes me all the more curious about Galarian Rapidash. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you thought this was My Little Pony before? I'm predicting it now. They're gonna go full Pegasus. I feel it. I feel it. This is the time. This is the time for a Pegasus Pokemon. All right. I mean, it's magic, wings, long flowing mane. Why not?
Yeah. I like the design of this Pokemon. When I see it, it reminds me of what the unicorn looks like in Sonic Adventure 2 Battle when you get one for your chow. It's basically a mirror image of Galarian Ponyta. But I always liked Ponyta as a Pokemon, and you're right, Rapidash is sweet as well. This is probably my number one new form so far. I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, just as the one more thing during the 24-hour live stream, we also saw one more Pokemon that looks like a little red gremlin, pink gremlin, something like that. Like, I wonder what Pokemon is going to be that when they introduce it.
No idea. They still haven't announced a lot of Pokemon. It's weird. I mean, we're now less or almost like a month away. They're got to do a Nintendo Direct, like a full-on Pokemon Nintendo Direct.
They'll do that probably the week before it launches. I think that's usually what they do.
Right, there'll
definitely be one. I would just think it's going to be early November, mid-November, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. All right. Also on the Pokemon side, this happened a few weeks back. We got the first tease of the brand new Pokemon anime that is coming, and it will feature Galar, just not in the way we're probably thinking. There's going to be two main characters, Ash, obviously, although there was some wondering if he would come back after winning the Alola League officially now. Still hasn't happened in America, only happened in Japan. But this time he is going to be basically going on, I guess they're calling it a victory tour, and they're going to be touring all the other regions with a brand new character named Gao, G-A-U. You could even say Pokemon Gao. Get it? Because it's like catchy. Catch-em. Just... It's bad. Anyway, Gao, as he is called, is from the Galar region. His partner is a Scorbunny, the best of the starters, obviously. And he's going to be going around the world to actually be a true quote-unquote Pokemon master, which actually Veronica Taylor had an interesting thing on being a Pokemon master at her time in New York Comic Con, but he wants to capture every single Pokemon in the world, including Mew, who he apparently has a connection with, kind of like how Ash had Ho-Oh. So the style is, my opinion, slightly better visually than Sun and Moon. Ash still doesn't look like, you know, Kalos Ash, which was my favorite version of the character, but it's better. He definitely doesn't look as goofy as he does in Sun and Moon. But it's interesting because they're not saying that Ash is going to the Galar region. He's doing like a quote victory tour, and yet we see Galar Pokemon. And then there's all the promo art has shown off, you know, stuff about Sinnoh and Johto and Hoenn and all the, like, there's a shot of Gao and Ash riding Lugia. So it's just like, it's very curious.
Again, he just recently won the Pokemon League, so I guess he probably wants to take a good 1 year break before moving on to the next Pokemon League. Perhaps that's kind of the reason. That would be an interesting motivation to go on a victory tour, as you said.
So, yeah, I'm excited for this. Of course, I'm still waiting for, you know, us to get to the Alola League in the anime here on the American side of things, but I will wait, especially now that I know the results. So I'm very interested in seeing where this Gao's.
Uh-huh.
No, shut up. I'm the host. All right. To something I'm now also very looking forward to, the next episode of Death Battle. We haven't been able to talk about this on the podcast yet. The next episode is a highly requested matchup between two of the greatest villains in video game history. Ganondorf versus Dracula from Castlevania. Yeah, and this is going to be their quote-unquote Halloween episode, if you will, so that's going to be entertaining. And it's going to be a 3D death battle done in the Source engine, of all things, so that's a first for death battle. And I never knew I wanted this matchup until I saw it announced, because it's so obvious! It's the bad guys! It's the guys who just won't die, you know, masters of sorcery and desperate to take over the world and kill all of mankind, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Everyone thinks about Ganon versus Bowser, which they did back in season 3, and now we're having Ganon versus Dracula, and they just showed a preview for the fight, and it looks really crisp. So I'm and they're using the forms of Ganondorf and Dracula from Smash Brothers. Or at least one of them. I mean, I think pretty sure Dracula is from the Smash Brothers version. The Ganon is slightly tweaked to look more like Ocarina of Time, which is of course obviously his most popular Ganondorf form. So, but still, I'm very excited for this one. I think Ganon's gonna win, but I've had people tell me that Dracula might have this in the bag. It's hard to say. They are so powerful and they are so alike in their abilities. So, yeah.
Like,
It's
that's here's the
definitely.
thing, because this is just gets back into my issues with the concept of Death Battle. The Master Sword, that's what you need to defeat Ganondorf. You know, it's the Blade of Evil's Bane. I don't know if you know this, but Dracula can't wield the Master Sword.
Well, it's not
So
just
it's a
okay,
real
first of all,
problem for Dracula. That's going to be a tough thing for him to overcome. And I don't think he can. I think Ganondorf wins because Dracula, he can't wield the Master Sword.
No, it's okay, first of all, it's specifically stated that it's not just the Master Sword that can kill Ganon. All right, it's specifically holy weapons like the Master Sword, the silver arrows, if you recall, those affect Ganon. And
That's
if you
true. The gold, yeah.
remember Twilight Princess, before he got the Triforce of Power, he was stabbed with a holy sword that should have killed him.
I mean, he can get messed up by those things,
Yeah.
but the only thing that will, you know, destroy Ganondorf, that would be the old
It's
Master Sword. I don't even think the light arrows can kill him.
not per se. I mean, again, let's recheck it out. Get the light arrows actually only stuns Ganondorf per se. I mean, it does hurt him, but it only stuns him. And yeah, just about the matchup between Ganondorf and Dracula. I mean, I'm only referencing regarding to the recent Castlevania Netflix anime series, and like Dracula probably has a better upkeep regarding to magical power. I mean, the fact that, again, he lived for how many millennia? But then again, it could be said the same thing for Ganondorf. So, in terms of like lifespan, they can definitely, they are evenly matched. It just really depends on like how cunning those two are. I mean, like Ganondorf is cunning to the point, while Dracula is like, again, lived for millennia for centuries to the point of battling so many generations of the Belmonts. So it's
Yeah.
kind of an interesting match, to say the least,
Well,
yes.
and speaking of the Belmonts, the reason that they can kill Dracula is because they have a holy weapon in the Vampire Killer. So both of these guys can only be killed by holy weapons, or so they say, and neither of them are holy, so how exactly are they going to kill each other? That's the thing. Like, there's a people who are telling me that Dracula can steal souls, and that would be enough, but does Ganon have a soul?
That's a good question. I would think he probably does.
Yeah, and not just that, would the soul be enough to kill him? Because, yes, you could say that without a soul, your body is limp, but this is also Ganondorf, who has freaking magic, is actually immortal, just like Dracula, and has the Triforce of Power, which has willed him from death itself to stay alive. Just like I said in Twilight Princess, he was stabbed through the freaking heart with a holy sword. Triforce of Power comes out. He pulls that sword out and crushes a guy with his hand, Dimitri style. All right, although
Oh,
I
that
guess
scene was so good.
it was.
That scene was something else.
Yeah, I it's still one of my favorite. Just the sound effects.
The laugh,
It
his
was the
laugh, and then
laugh.
the way his head cocks back was awesome. Anyway.
So, anyway, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be on next Wednesday on YouTube on the Death Battle channel. Definitely go and check that out, especially if you're a Legend of Zelda fan. All right, so moving on to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, because what's talking about Blizzard maybe coming to the show with Overwatch when you can talk about all the leaks that are still coming out for the game? When will we ever learn? Tyler.
I think this one's on you. I wouldn't even report these. I've seen
Well,
nothing
two
from
of them.
credible sources on this.
No, two of them I actually believe. Two of them I. Oh, okay, let me revise that. I could believe that it's possible that these characters could show up in there. The other two are complete bunk. All right. The latest batch of quote unquote leaks about who might be in the game is A, Crash Bandicoot, which I think we all agree is very possible, especially since he's been on the console multiple times, and especially now with the Insane Trilogy. And a lot of people have been asking for him in Spyro in Smash, which is possible. It's possible. Next up is Rayman. I also think this is possible. Nintendo's got a great relationship with Ubisoft, which he proved with Raving Rabbids, which was an offshoot of Rayman. So, and I think with his unique platforming abilities and certain other things, he could totally work. Now, the ones that I totally don't believe is Professor Egad. How does that work exactly? Well, he could have the poltergeist just like Luigi, except he made it for Luigi, and if he could have done the job himself, he would have done it. So I don't know what that's about.
Egad would be awesome. No,
Oh,
so hear me
stop.
out on this.
Oh,
Hear me out on
gosh.
this. I'm gonna play devil. I don't think it's gonna be Egad, obviously.
Thank you.
I'm sticking with third parties. But give him the brush. He made Bowser Jr.'s brush.
He did?
Flood. He made the brush, he made Flood, he made all the Poltergusts. You could use all of that. And Final Smash. He drinks some coffee, gets real strong, beats the crap out of people like Wario Man from Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga. He's the barista at the coffee shop. That would be sweet. So yeah, there you go. I mean, you could do it. The brush alone would be great. It's a crime that Bowser Jr. doesn't have the brush, but outside of Final Smash.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, he still has his Final Smash. All right, and then the other leak is Bandana D.
Yeah, that's been rumored for a long time.
I don't get the connection. Okay, ooh, he has a spear. Who cares?
Yeah,
All
it's
right.
just Kirby. They want a new Kirby character, which, you know, I understand would be nice to get a new Kirby character in. Bandana D does not really move the meter for me. I remember I told DK DJ that people were begging for Bandana D, and he was cracking up. He thought I was kidding, like that nobody would actually ask for that. And yet, there are a lot of people who really want Bandana D in. And could they make a moveset for him? Sure. They can make a moveset for every single character in Kirby, including like the bomb, little bomb guy, I forget his name. Knuckle Joe, of course. Like all those
Okay.
Kirby copy abilities have a ton of moves that they could use. So Spear would work. It just, I mean, there's so many better choices.
So I don't know. I don't know where these leaks come from. I mean, seriously. I mean, again, Crash Bandicoot and Rayman, I could buy that. I could totally see them in the game. All right, I honestly think they would fit right alongside. And then Professor Egad and Bandana D. I mean, if Nintendo is that desperate, then they clearly don't know all of the characters that they could have had. I mean, there are assist trophies right now who are begging to be real characters. Midna, Isaac, Zero, Shovel Knight, Bomberman, Crystal, who again was the most requested character for Super Smash Bros. Brawl, but didn't get in. So if you're gonna put those characters over those characters, you got problems, Nintendo. You got problems.
I mean, I'm gonna let Sakurai do what he wants because he put in Banjo. I've said it before. He put in Banjo.
Put
That's
in
all I
Banjo.
wanted, and I love Hero. Hero is so much fun to me. I mean, I got two really cool characters, and Joker's really cool too. So if he wants to put Bandana D in, you know what? Go ahead and put Bandana D in. Dixie Kong would be way better, but that's all right.
All right, so finally, and this is one that actually brings a smile to my face. It's been told by the creators of Ori and the Blind Forest, which recently came out on Nintendo Switch, the definitive edition, that Ori actually plays the best on the Nintendo Switch. So take that.
Oh, I'm sure that that's coming at the price of the best possible graphics, and
No.
I don't know what.
Actually, they said the reason was because Ori and the Blind Forest came out a couple years ago, and they've been improving everything that they do for Ori and the Will of the Wisps. So, Wisps. Great name.
Okay, yeah, that makes
Wisps.
sense.
So, by the time they were making the Switch version of the game, they were already waist deep into Will of the Wisps. Wisps. Great name. I appreciate you, Death Battle fans who get that joke. So they were when they were making the Switch version, they were remembering everything that they did to make Will of the Wisps better. So they just put that into the game, which allowed the game to actually run at 60 frames per second on the Switch versus 30 frames per second everywhere else. So definitively, this is the best version of Ori and the Blind Forest.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I know it's just one of the things because usually we hear like, oh, the Switch version plays the best, or it looks the best because on the Switch because of you can take it around with you and blah blah blah. No, this is the developer saying that the best version is on the Switch, and I love it. So I actually wanted to get this game, but I just haven't had time yet, so we'll see how it goes.
Right. I'm probably just waiting for, like, probably get, like, a $5, even, like, to the point of, like, $15 or $10. Well, I'm waiting for a sale, because I really do want to try this, like, this very beautiful game. Yes.
Yeah.
Ditto. All
right, and for our main event tonight, we are going to be looking at the not-so-distant future of video games, specifically in the form of the next Xbox title, codenamed Scarlet, and the PS5 codename / revealed name, PS5. I mean, were we really surprised by that one? I mean, come on. Why
great
that the tradition?
Onion article I saw that said, Microsoft beats Sony to the punch by naming their new Xbox the PlayStation 6. It's super funny. We're not sure how Sony will react to the being beaten to the punch.
Yeah, I just want to note that I've never watched The Big Bang Theory in regards to a full episode, but one of the funniest things I've ever seen was Sheldon trying to explain to his then-girlfriend Amy why he was mad about the different names of the Xbox consoles versus the PlayStation consoles, and he's trying to explain how he's confused about how the Xbox One is a step up for the Xbox 360 when one is a lesser number than 360, versus how the PS4 is definitively a better number than PS3 because 4 comes after 3 in the number line. And he's just trying to explain to Amy, who is clearly not having any of this, but she is listening because she knows that if he doesn't talk about it, he's never going to get off his... He's never going to shut up. And it's just... look up that scene. Seriously, it's hilarious. But that's the one benefit that, honestly, the Sony consoles have over all the others is that they will never, ever have to worry about the name. Because all they have to do is use the next number in the line, while the Switch, while Nintendo and Microsoft are always going to have to think of clever code names.
You know what? I disagree, though. I think Nintendo definitively has the best names for their consoles. And they tell you something about the console. Like the Switch, it tells you what it is, and I think that's a powerful tool. Meanwhile, the PS5, I hear that name and I'm like, oh, it's another PlayStation. It's a PlayStation 4, but with faster loading times, and which is what it is. But
yeah. So anyway, the new consoles are coming out. We now have confirmation that they are going to be coming out in holiday 2020, so within, let's just say, November to... Wait, is it, want to say March? March of 2020. So, with the Switch, by that time, going to be beginning year 4, and those consoles are going to be starting their new life cycles, we're going to talk about how we think these new consoles are going to affect the Switch in a Nintendo discussion. All right, so Tyler, you were actually one who created this topic, which I appreciate. So I want you to take it off. How do you think the Scarlet and the now-revealed PS5, are going to affect the Switch in terms of sales, in terms of competition? What is on your mind?
Well, right away, we're going to see the Switch feeling dated when those consoles come out. For the first time in its lifespan, the Switch won't be the newest console on the market, and some of that shine and excitement that the Switch has had is absolutely going to shift, especially with gamers who have both PlayStation and Switch or Xbox and Switch. There's going to be a lot of buzz pushing those new consoles. So I definitely think Nintendo's going to need to buckle up because they're going to be seeing their third-party support probably dwindle as the superior technology in the next gen forces developers to prioritize which versions they want to play or which games or, you know, how they want to develop their games are probably going to be too advanced for at least this current model of Switch. So Nintendo's going to need to really start mapping out their first-party releases again if they want to kind of keep momentum with this current Switch device. Because as it stands, I expect them to see a kind of significant drop-off when those consoles release. They won't be the new kid on the playground anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be interesting because again with Nintendo they have this like jump ahead around, and now like these new consoles, new systems gonna be coming up and try to usurp their hype. It's definitely going to be interesting because, again, like Xbox Scarlett and PS5 is basically they're just full on great power. Like, we're going to, there's talks about backward compatibility, loading times, like if they can really process how these great games, like that even rivals that of PCs, which, again, there has been a debate of like if game systems are basically becoming PCs now, but that's another debate. It's Nintendo is definitely gonna have to do a lot more to like really maintain its momentum, because again, like a lot of things they can probably improve on, like the Nintendo Online Switch services, or just continue to make great properties, or like even new ideas like Ring Fit Adventure that's coming up later on. Like, they're gonna have to do something really more to like really continue to sell the Nintendo Switch, even though with it's like 2-3 years ahead of the new of the other consoles.
I have a special perspective on this. And Tyler, you said, oh, the Switch is going to look dated. If we're being honest, the Switch already looks dated now, because these consoles are pushing, you know, 1080p, 4K HD with Knuckles and all of that. And the Switch can do HD, but nowhere near that quality. And sometimes the handheld mode really suffers in terms of graphics. I'm happy to say that Link's Awakening does not suffer from that. So there's that. But we know the Switch can be beautiful. It has plenty of games that shows that crispness, including Odyssey and Breath of the Wild. Astral Chain was a good one. Tyler's favorite game, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, showed that a lot at times.
I will give Xenoblade Chronicles 2 credit for that. That might be the prettiest game on Switch.
There you go. And we know that when Bayonetta comes out on Switch, it is going to look so good, so crisp, just like it looked on the Wii U. And that was one of the most beautiful games on the Wii U, and that's why one of the reasons it was best, one almost got Game of the Year. Fire Emblem, even with its somewhat unique style visually, it still looked really, really good, despite somewhat bare bones on the levels design and textures and such, which is fine.
Fire Emblem looked really, really good.
I felt it looked good. The animated cutscenes at least looked good. Can we agree on
yes,
that?
Yes, the animated cutscenes look great.
There you go. So, anyway. But I think that the real issue here is not the graphics, and it's not whatever hook or whatever they're going to do. Like, I know the Xbox said that they're going to try and eliminate load times, which is awesome. I appreciate that. Whether they actually do it is another issue entirely. I know that the PS5, which again, shocking name reveal. I saw that the CEO, Jim Ryan, or whatever, was like, I feel like a huge weight is lifted off my shoulders now that I can reveal the name. We knew the name! We're gamers! We're not idiots! Well, okay, some of us are. But some. I mean, there are some people that think that, Nintendo's not a great game company and that they should go to software only. And then I look at the Switch sales and go, yeah, tell me what now? So, totally just a software company, just like AEW is just a shirt company. Wrestling reference, you're welcome. But I think, as in all things, the answer is going to be the games. The reason the Switch is doing so well is twofold. It's a portable console, which we've honestly never had before in this capability. Even the Wii U was only limited in its range. You know, this is a portable console. Take anywhere. Play with friends. Here's a Joy-Con. Go at it, you two. That's glorious. But the other thing was the games. From the moment, literally, that the Switch came out, we had great games. 2017, 2018, 2019, another banner year for games. And even though 2020 is a little bit murky in its, future and everything, we have to look at what games are going to be provided. And I know that the fanboys of Xbox and Sony, who I know are listening to this, because why wouldn't you, are going to say, oh, well, Todd, 2020 is going to be one of the biggest years in all of gaming for those consoles. You're going to have Halo. You're going to have Final Fantasy VII. You're going to have Cyberpunk 2077. You're going to have Last of Us Part 2. And I know I'm forgetting a big one. What is it? Doom Eternal got delayed. So right. That's going to be in that same area of effect. And I know there's going to be, I think there's like one more other big title. I'm blinking on it right now. But you are absolutely right. That block, January to May of that year, is going to be jam-packed with games across all three consoles, no doubt. All right? And that's great. But what comes after? It would have meant nothing on the Switch if we had to wait 10 months for the next great title. outside of Breath of the Wild. But we got Mario Kart Deluxe 8 in May, which was no, April, which was one is still one of the best-selling games on the system. We got ARMS in June, Splatoon 2 in July, Rabbids in August, and on and on and on. And then Odyssey in October, and Xenoblade in December. So that right there was a jam-packed year. What is both the Scarlet and the PS5 going to have in their first year that'll make people want to get the games? Because, again, you're going to have that first 5 months. I grant you. Let's just say they both come out in January, okay? Just that March and April is so packed full of games that are going to be an amazing quality, are made by definitive people. Oh, Avengers! Knew I forgot something. Avengers. That's going to be in March, I think. March or April. Or is it May? Whatever. But, you know, that's going to be another killer game, no doubt, all right? So you have all of those. I grant you all that. What comes after? Because as everyone knows, the reason the Xbox One is literally the failure of this generation. I'm including the Switch in this generation because the Wii U had games. But the reason the Xbox One failed in comparison to the 360 is that it didn't have exclusive titles. And they can throw 50 games out at E3, but if, you know, 5 of them are exclusive and you can get the other 45 on PC or a PS4 or Switch or Wii U, you know, you're not doing something right. And then some of the highly touted first-party exclusives like Crackdown 3 were terrible.
Right.
And let's not forget, a lot of the games that I mentioned are not exclusives on the Xbox, all right? Final Fantasy VII, that's for Sony. Cyberpunk, on all three, including PC. Avengers, multi-platform, I think. Isn't it?
Yes, I believe it is.
Yeah, it's multi-platform. It feels like it should be multi-platform. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. I know it's made by Crystal.
Sure it is.
It's made by Crystal Dynamics, and that they made Tomb Raider, but Tomb Raider was exclusive to Xbox, wasn't it?
It was time exclusive.
Time exclusive. Yeah. Okay. Even if it's a timed exclusive, that's not fully exclusive. So, the key thing here is going to be what games fill up the first year, not the first few months. The first year. If you can deliver that, then you'll be fine. There's a reason the PS4 dominated this generation. It had hit after hit after hit, even going into 2019. It was lighter this year, I grant you, but like 2018 was full of hits.
Sure.
And 2019 had some hits. Resident Evil, Kingdom Hearts, Mortal Kombat. Devil May Cry 5. Well, that was multi-platform.
Oh, that's
still,
multi. Yeah.
Anyway, but they most likely bought the most on the PS4. But like that's the thing. What
I think you're underrating though just how important third-party support. I mean, I have a ton of third-party Switch games, and it's been delightful. But when the next gen of when the PlayStation 5 and Scarlet come out, We're not going to be getting ports of Dragon Quest 2 years after, a year after the other versions came out. It's just the gap in technology is going to be too much. We'll definitely, hopefully, we'll see a lot more Octopath Traveler type games that have been built for the Switch ground up. But I'm not going to guarantee that that's something we're going to see. I think the biggest thing that Nintendo needs to do with next-gen consoles coming out is release an updated Switch model.
Which is rumored.
To happen. But I think it would be smart for Nintendo. I'm of two minds on this. I don't think they should release it right when they release the November, or when the other consoles come out in November. So maybe a 2021 release, or maybe you try to beat them to the punch and release the updated model beforehand. But the third-party support has been so key for Switch, and I would like to see that continue, and I just don't think the current Switch model will be able to hang in there.
Right. Like, I definitely agree in the part, like, they're definitely gonna have to upgrade on the original Switch model. Again, now we have the Switch Lite that recently came out for full-fledged portability, so why not definitely up your hardware just a little bit? I mean, sure, it could be called the Switch Pro, whatever it could be. But I feel like just having that extra little power to help with, like, Breath of the Wild 2 or even, like, next games coming up for Nintendo Switch would be more beneficial, I feel like. I mean, heck, I definitely would buy another Switch just to, like, finally get some decent frame rates or even, like, I don't know, just, like, that little extra boost. Honestly, I mean, sure, it could be arguably same thing like with what they do with the PS4 Pro, but with Nintendo Switch, I feel like I think it could only benefit more because again with PS Pro, it was not actually full 4K. It was just like a little edge up, which really was like got a lot of people angry about. But with like the Switch Pro, which probably what I feel Nintendo can definitely do something like that with like really full-fledged upgrades instead of like what they did with Sony's PS4 Pro.
I acknowledge that we should get an enhanced version, especially since we've now gotten the official Nintendo Switch Lite. So, that would be an improvement. Although, in the end, though, as long as they don't again pull a 3DS, and I talked about this earlier on a previous podcast, as long as they don't do what they did with the 3DS and make it like, you have to have this game to play or this version of the Switch to play this kind of game, because that would suck. That would be fine, but I think that in the end, even the upgraded version, it's still going to come down to the games. All right? Because, the Xbox One, when it was released, it was touted as your literal all-in-one platform that you want. You'll control your TV, your computer, your everything, and no one cared.
Right,
Okay, some people cared. I'm sure some people cared out there. But, it was still about the games. And Xbox had some, but they didn't have enough. Sony. They focused on the games. They made sure that they could. They even focused on backwards compatibility, for the most part. And they made sure that some of the PS3 games were ported to the PS4 as best they could do. And so, I don't know. It's just I feel that what the Switch excels at, and this still applies to the Wii U and the GameCube. They weren't the best looking, but they had some of the best libraries, and sometimes the libraries are enough. And the Switch is killing it in sales even now, and they're about to have a big release of Pokemon. We've already got Animal Crossing lined up in that massive block of January through May, and that's gonna sell.
And just
So
to give you a heads up, because again, you've got Final Fantasy VII Remake on March, Animal Crossing in March, and now we've gone to like Doom Eternal also in March. March is packed. It's very packed, so it's gonna be a bloodbath during that month.
Nintendo will be fine for next year. I mean, again, they will still have the newest console on the market. But come November of 2020, and what made me think about this now was just with seeing the PlayStation 5 be officially, I don't know, announced, I guess, even though we've always known it was happening. It does make me think, are we either going to see a shorter lifespan for the Switch, or are we going to see Nintendo release an updated model and try to hang in there? And maybe they can, because the Switch, again, is just such a cool concept, and it is unique, and it is at a less expensive price point, so perhaps
Yes,
you see a
yes.
lot of people buying two consoles. But come the PlayStation 5 and the Scarlet, that shine is not going to be there anymore. And I know you said that the shine doesn't seem like it's there now, Todd. You said it seems dated as is.
In a
I just
way.
I disagree. I mean, I do. I see what you're saying. Tech-wise, it's not the best right now, in terms of like power. But I would say tech-wise, it actually is the best right now. It's the only hybrid console, and it still will be the only hybrid console. I mean, that's one thing Nintendo has going for it, is that, again, I am not impressed with what we're seeing from these next two consoles. They seem like just the same. It seems like another puny step forward, only focusing on the graphical power and now the loading screens. Those are like the big two things. Loading screens are going to be not as bit long, and you'll have slightly better graphics. But the graphics we have now are amazing. Like
Exactly.
there's no innovation with these two devices. That's one great thing Nintendo has going for them, is the Switch is still going to be the only console out there that can do what it can do.
In the words of a comedian that I heard, do I really need to see how many pores on the face of my weatherman? Like how many he has? No, I do not. I don't care about super 4K HD. I just want to see a good picture.
And yeah, like for me, I feel like obviously I definitely will be like since I grew up Nintendo, but it was only like later on that I actually did got myself like a PS2, PS3, PS4 down the line. So like if Nintendo Switch, it will always be with its own little thing. Obviously, like if you get Nintendo, you're just gonna buy for Nintendo. And like with the Scarlet or PS5, they're gonna have like other things. If you want power, then you either get one of the two, either get the Scarlet or get the PS5. Nintendo, you're always gonna have it for you, no doubt. And like me, I have my Switch and PS4 with me. So if you wanna grab another console that's like purely dedicated on power, like yeah, obviously only just pick from Scarlet or PS5. Well, Switch is just eternal, as we always say. It's eternal.
And
you
again,
know what was a big deal that we didn't touch on? That the Doom Eternal getting delayed.
I knew I forgot something.
That was rough because that was a day and date game. It was supposed to be. And now the Switch version is coming out at some point later than the other versions again. And it did seem too good to be true. But it just, the fact that it is a bummer.
Yeah, that is a bummer. But, and I know this. I know this doesn't help you, Tyler, but as we have learned with many Nintendo games, sometimes a delay means we're getting a better quality product.
Oh, I'm sure we are. I'm sure that it'll be, if they released it the day of the other their versions, it just wouldn't run well, but...
Yeah,
you never know. You never know. Again, Doom, like Wolfenstein has been good. Doom has been good, so...
Well,
I have
some of
Wolfenstein's
have been good.
Yep.
Still, for me, it really just boils down to the games. And again, 2019 is a perfect example of why the Switch is so dominant in that its first-party games and many of its third-party games, at least based on what I'm seeing, you know, million sellers all across the board, you know. And A Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, it's the fastest-selling game of the year for the Switch in Europe. I've heard similar things for America. And they're saying it's already outpacing Super Mario Maker 2 in some ways, which it sold 2.2 million in a few days. So if that's the case, then that's another at least million, if not 2 million seller. And you know, it's first month. We should be finding out the details soon because the quarterly reports are coming out. But Yoshi was a million seller. I've already forgotten all the games that came out this year. Help me out.
Mario Maker.
Over like 2.2 million, easily at 3 million, if not more by now.
Fire Emblem,
oh yeah, that's already at like 2 million. It was the fastest selling Fire Emblem game in history. You know, they're killing it, and you know that Pokemon is going to be a million seller. Luigi's Mansion is going to be a million seller because that's gotten a big boost in recent years in terms of fandom, and this game just looks so good.
It does. Everything we see about it looks better and better.
My Small Town Hero, I don't know if I'd call it a first person game. It is Game Freak, but that's not Nintendo per se. It's one of them like gray areas. Let's call it second party and be done with it. But if that one doesn't get a million, that's fine because
that won't get a million. Yeah, not a
you never know though. You never know. Sometimes game like we all said that we all knew that Mario and Rabbids wouldn't get a million, right? When we first saw it, like, what the heck is this game?
I thought it would definitely sell a million. It had Mario in it.
Not at first. We were all horrified by this game. Don't you remember?
I was not horrified by it.
You were. You were so horrified.
I believe, you can tell by the tone of your voice that you don't remember me being horrified.
No, I'm talking, this is about time period. When we saw the leak, when we saw the leak for the game, we're like, what the heck is this crap? Then we saw the E3 footage and we're like, okay, yeah, this is going to be something special. It's a time period thing. Time period. Anyway, so again, it's just about the games, and that's why I'm honestly right now a little worried about 2020, because right now the only original title that we've got for the Switch coming out is Animal Crossing so far. But I also have enough hope for Nintendo to know that they're going to at least have one or two major killer apps that year outside of Animal Crossing, because that's what they've been doing every single year. So the pressure for me is on Microsoft and Sony to say, okay, here's what we got. Here's what we got coming. This is what we've done for 4 years. What you got? Oh, we got better graphics. Who cares? What do you got? Because Animal Crossing is going to sell like crazy. It doesn't even have close to the best graphics in the world. Mario and Rabbids was good. It was XCOM for Mario and Rabbids. It was the most insane crossover you could probably think of. Okay, that's a lie. We all know that's a lie. But still, you know, a lot of these games don't have the best graphics in the world, and they're selling like crazy because people want great games. So what you got? All right. Oh, we got Final Fantasy. Excellent. What's after that? We got Cyberpunk. What's after that? Avengers. What's after that? Exactly. Because we know what's coming for Nintendo. At least some of it. We know Metroid is out there somewhere. We know that Retro is doing something outside of Metro.
That's the thing. I mean, we really don't know what's coming for Nintendo. The last Direct was very short term.
Very. Yeah.
We'll know more come January, but it does look like... I mean, we know Tokyo Mirage Sessions and Animal Crossing.
And Xenoblade Chronicles.
Right. So.
Remake. Yeah.
So, again, it's light right now, but we have hope. And again, we know that out there somewhere is Metroid. And they're still going to touch upon some of the other franchises that they haven't gotten to yet. I would bet dollars to donuts there's going to be a Donkey Kong game. F-Zero? Yeah, I don't know. Star Fox. I would bet on Star Fox.
I would bet on a Mario Odyssey sequel next year.
I think that's possible. So there's a lot of we have the roster to look at Nintendo and say, here's what they're probably gonna make. Sony has a roster that they can pull from, but will they? That's the question. And then Xbox is as bare bones as you can get outside of Gears and Halo. And we already know Gears just came out this year, and Halo is coming out as the launch title for the Xbox Scarlet, which is a brilliant move. There's no denying that. But what's after Halo? So that's my feelings on it.
And of course,
we want you to tell us your feelings on it on the comments below, with us on Twitter, whatever you want. So, with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Wisps! Tyler!
Yes! Two weeks ago, we asked you which rapper would be your favorite to sing the DK Raps.
I forgot about this! I hate you.
I guess our crowd might be a little too kosher because we didn't get a lot of votes on this one. Not a lot of people are familiar with Cardi B, Migos, Eminem, Lil Wayne, who all split the vote. So 25% for each. We only had one vote on each thing.
Wow, talk about a low vote count. But that's what you get when it's not Nintendo themed.
Well, you know, I thought our audience might be a little more cultured. That's okay. But you know what? I think we should take a little break from the polls. How about that? Because we've gotten low votes for the past several. Maybe we mix them in for special occasions more often. And this week, we asked people to just leave a 5-star review, or leave any review. If you hate the show, leave a 1-star review and tell Todd that he's a terrible host.
Shut up. I am a glorious host. I am a glorious host, and you know it, all right?
No, I do know it. But if you don't agree, just, you know.
All right. Okay. We'll skip. Since the poll is going to be Sony and Microsoft themed anyway, we will skip the poll for this week, and then we'll come back next week and do a poll. Okay?
That sounds good.
All right. And again, as long as one person votes on our poll, we're making progress.
That's true.
I take that. And it also means that the person who's actually in control of the handle for NEP Podcast should probably just get off a sorry butt and start making more posts so we can get more followers so that they'll find our polls more.
I mean, that's not a bad idea.
I know it's not.
You're definitely right about that.
Yeah, and that's why I'm the host.
And also, just a little tip, Tyler, because since you also are the handler, like, I suggest definitely using when you play your video games, like Link's Awakening or with Dragon Quest XI, definitely take some sneak snapshots on your Switch, post them on Twitter, and you're gonna get good views. I promise you that.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty good about the snapshots. I haven't been playing anything new recently, you know? I'm just not gonna flood the NEP handle enough with Fire Emblem takes, so...
Why not? If we get a bunch of Fire Emblem fans following our stuff, we will have our kin.
That's a good idea. That's a good point. I would hope that our kin already, you know, follows our...
You do realize I know how many followers we actually have on our Twitter handle, so clearly that's not the case. And no, I'm not blaming you fans, but if you do want to follow us at NEP Podcast, that's at NEP Podcast, spread the word about us, tell more people about the podcast. We're here for you, Nintendo fans. We hope you'll be here for us. So, for Tellius Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level. Raise a flag.